Pakistani state continues to harass the teachers, and many teachers are being dismissed from their jobs or are being forced to leave. Many other teachers are also being threatened and face false accusations. Despite the threats and the repression, the teachers are determined to continue the fight. The Pakistan Trade Union Defense Campaign is actively participating in the struggle in defense of the rights of teachers. From Pakistan, we interview Lal Khan, who is a writer and an internationalist militant. He's author of Partition, Can It Be Undone? Lal Khan is also the international secretary of the Pakistan Trade Union Defense Campaign and editor of the Asian Marxist Review. With us, Lal Khan.
About the ban of the Sindh Union teachers by the Musharraf regime, could you please give us a brief background of what happened and what is the plight of the trade union movement in the country in general?
Ever since the present regime came into power in 1999, which was a military dictatorship, it was a military coup, it has been trying to pursue the policies of the IMF and the World Bank and trying to please American imperialism in its external policies, in the so-called war against terror, American invasion and American attack on Afghanistan, and similarly on the internal domestic side, they've been trying to carry through the policies of privatization, of deregulation, restructuring, and downsizing and things like that. And these policies are very pertinent on the question of the rights of the workers. And so they have been suppressing trade union movement generally, and they have been banning unions in a lot of important sectors of the economy, like the railways, like the airlines. And they have repressed this. And this ban of trade unions of the teachers in Sindh has come about in continuation of this policy, which has been sponsored by the World Bank and the IMF and on the behest of imperialism. And the Musharraf regime, in a slavish manner, is carrying through the dictates of those imperialists. But the situation in Sindh is already very bad. The teachers are very low paid, and what they're trying to do is they're trying to introduce private sector in education and suppress the, cut the costs on education and services. And this is an act in accordance with those policies.
Yes, regarding, just to draw a similarity here, we have in Bangladesh, next door, the wealthiest 16% of the rural population controls two-thirds of the land. About 70% of the members of the parliament in Bangladesh hold land. Yeah. So are there any similarities of wealth distribution and inequality in Pakistan?
Well, I think it's even worse in Pakistan, because I think the 80% of the land is owned by the 20% of the landholders. And but even the biggest landholders are controlled by 5% of the population. And there's drudgery, there's slave labor, there are private prisons of these landlords, and there's a lot of torture going on. And this is especially very prominent in Sindh, where these feudal landlords have a sway and hold on the politics of the province and the country, and they even take up large parts of the PPP, which was supposed to be a workers' and a peasants' party. And these landlords and these feudals, they through that enter the parliament, and parliament is dominated predominantly by industrialists and by the feudals. There are very few people from the middle classes, almost nobody from the oppressed classes.
Yeah, regarding, because here, I mean, especially in Britain and in the West in general, when we mention the country, Pakistan, we remember the Musharraf regime, we remember it is related to Afghanistan and how some section of the generals in power there, they supported the Taliban and so on. Also, when we mention Pakistan, we mention those who, some rich-born people were trained or they were linked, as the intelligence here say, they were linked to the bombings in London and so on. Pakistan is also related to what happened in recently, the earthquake in Kashmir and the big disaster, and how much suffering had been held there. So, I'm sure there are many, many things you can tell us about that. But can you give us more account about what's happening in the Pakistani society?
Well, the Americans first introduced Islamic fundamentalism to carry through this counter-revolutionary insurgency in Afghanistan after the April Revolution in 1978. And the whole of the Pakistani army and the Pakistani inter-services intelligence agency were involved in training these so-called mujahideen to fight that insurgency. But after the Americans left, they were still there, and they felt just dropped out. And they were not just people from the oppressed classes. The oppressed classes were the foot soldiers, but the intelligentsia and the intellectuals and the main leaders of these Islamic fundamentalism are from upper classes. They represent a huge, massive amount of black money, which is still being generated. For example, this year, 92% of world's heroin and opium products were produced in Afghanistan, and they are channeled through a network which involves these Islamic fundamentalist sections of the Pakistan army, the Pakistani state, and all these warlords who are involved in this whole embroglio that's going on in Afghanistan at the moment. And hence, these people, for their own sake, are propping up Islamic fundamentalism to protect their own sections of finance capital, especially the black economy that has been generated through the trade of drugs and arms in the last period. Now, in this question about Kashmir, I think it was a disaster, but the biggest help came from the poor people rather than rich people. Throughout Pakistan, it was the poor who donated most. It was the people from the oppressed classes, the youth from, especially from the oppressed classes, who went up to Kashmir and who really provided relief. But still, relief has not been there. The money has been usurped by the state. The foreign aid of about $600 million was repaid by the Pakistani regime in the debt rescheduling and debt servicing. And that's how they have been trying to mishandle and misappropriate. And there's an enormous amount of corruption in this whole relief operation. And the state has failed. And even 1 year after the earthquake, 1.8 million people are still out in the wilderness. Again, there is snow coming. The winter is going to be terrible. And the state is totally incapable of doing anything with it.
In these conditions, you have a state failing people and at the same time a state which is banning unions and so on. So in these conditions, yes. Is it easy for you as trained unionist, as an activist and so on, is it easy to work between the hammer of the state and the anvil of political Islam?
Well, the thing is, you know, in Pakistan, the working class has not been decisively defeated. And still, the state, because of its own internal contradictions, is not capable to carry through a big massacre. So there have been very important struggles which the state has been able to defeat, not by, just by repression, but by buying up the trade union leaders and things like that. So it's not an easy thing for us to work in. But still, because of the support of the youth, there's a new turn-up of the left-wing movement amongst the youth, especially in Kashmir, and the support of the working class, we have been able to sustain ourselves. And fundamentalists have been exposed by their connivance with the state. At the same time, they're in the opposition, while at the same time, they're collaborating with the state. So the state and the fundamentalists are both being very rapidly isolated from the social base. People are, they're being exposed to the masses in general, and the masses are now trying to understand what their reality is. So it's difficult, but still we can work for the time being. And if the repression comes, we'll see who wins, we or the state.
Because of your internationalist perspective, you also deal and analyze the situation in the whole Middle East. So in that, recently you've just published a book called Israel Lebanon, and by the Struggle Publications in Lahore. The book deals with the so-called class of civilization, among other issues like Lebanon-Israel war, historical background of the Middle East. There is a chapter on Hezbollah and another chapter on Iran. So many books have been written on the subject. What do you think distinguish your analysis from the others?
Well, firstly, I think the book has got enormous response in Pakistan. It has already been reviewed by the BBC in Britain in their website. Mm-hmm. But the difference in my book and other books is that I've been trying to link the internal conflicts within Israel, within the Arab states, within the Middle East, with the external conflict and war. I've been trying to relate it that historically how Israel was created and how the Zionist state, which is a source of extreme disparity, extreme discontent, extreme turmoil and turbulence and bloodshed in the Middle East, how can it be defeated? And there are only two ways to defeat it. It was defeated in the 56 Arab War, the war around the Suez Canal, only because there was a rising revolutionary tide in Egypt and Nasser was pursuing more left-wing policies. But Israeli state cannot be defeated by the present Arab regimes, even by the present leadership of Hamas and the present leadership of Fatah, which are both based on the same capitalist system. And now we see a new resurgence of class struggle, also within Israel, but also within Palestine, where we see the teachers, the doctors, the state employees, everybody's rising up on a class basis rather than on a national basis. And similarly, I've tried to relate the whole struggle of nationalist conflict with the class conflict and class struggle within those societies. So that's the difference which this book makes, and it also gives a historical analysis of the processes in the Middle East, how left-wing was the Middle East, the revolutions in Syria, the revolutions in Yemen. Yemen in 1971 was named as the Marxist People's Republic of Yemen. The left-wing upsurge in Egypt, the rise of Nasserism, the left-wing movements in Iraq. And there was a whole left-wing upsurge. To defeat that, the Americans introduced the Zionist state, and at the same time, they introduced organizations like Hamas and Akhwan al-Muslimin and other organizations to combat the left-wing within even the Palestinian movement, like the movements around George Bush's PFLP, the movement around the DFLP of Fawad Hatmeh, and other left-wing insurgents, and PLO was very left-wing at that stage. So we have to analyze and make the present and this generation understand the real history of the Middle East. It's not all fundamentalism. It never was like that. It never will be like that. So that's what I've tried to make the difference in this book.